What's up, everybody? This is the Locked On Yankees podcast, your daily podcast covering the New York Yankees. We are brought to you by the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. If you're a new listener, hello and welcome. I hope you enjoy the show. I'm your host, Stacey Gottsoulias. I'm an author of Baseball Prospectus, and you can follow me on Twitter at StaceGotts, which is my personal account, or Locked On Yankees. You can listen and subscribe to Locked On Yankees on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can also listen to the show on our website, Locked On Yankees. And finally, you can play Locked On Yankees on your smart speakers by saying play podcast Locked On Yankees. As always, you can email questions or comments to lockedonnyy@gmail.com. In today's episode of Locked On Yankees, we'll revisit 40 years ago this afternoon, or the day Bucky Dent became Bucky fucking Dent. We'll also recap the two tiebreaker games that occurred yesterday and preview the NL wildcard game. So I used to have a feature at the Hardball Times called Random Box Score. I'd take a game randomly, write about the action and the players in it, and I'd turn it into a story. I haven't written one since the beginning of the season for a reason I can't get into here, but I will say that I do miss doing it. So this segment is going to be the oral version of that feature, if you can take it. So here we go. On October 2nd, 1978, I was 4 years old. My brother was about to turn 6 months old. My parents were in the process of buying our first house, and the Yankees and Red Sox were tied atop the AL East standings. In other 1978 news, Kiss You All Over by Exile was the number one song on the Hot 100 charts that week and for the next 3 weeks. Up in Smoke was in theaters, and the world was just 6 days away from the release of Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. If you're not familiar with that movie, you should acquaint yourself with it. It's something. October 2nd was a Monday, so after the game, you could have been watching Welcome Back, Cotter, or WKRP in Cincinnati at 8 p.m., Monday Night Football at 9 p.m., or if you weren't a football fan, you could have watched NBC's Movie of the Week, which aired after Little House on the Prairie. The Yankees were 14 games in back of the Red Sox on July 19th, 1978, and stormed their way back into the AL East race, which ended in a tie, thus the reason for this one-game playoff. And unlike yesterday's tiebreakers, this game was win or go home. The umpires that day were Don Dechinger at home plate, Jim Evans at first, Al Clark at second, and Steve Palermo at third. Remember Steve Palermo? The managers were Bob Lemon for the Yankees and Don Zimmer for the Sox. Ron Guidry started for the Yankees, and former Yankee Mike Torres started for the Red Sox. Boston opened up the scoring in the bottom of the second when Carl Yastrzemski took Guidry deep to start the inning. It was 1-0 Boston until the bottom of the sixth when Jim Rice hit an RBI single to score Rick Burleson, who started the inning with a double. Guidry got Yaz to ground out, intentionally walked Carlton Fisk, and then got Fred Lynn to fly out to right to end the inning. The top of the seventh started off with a Greg Nettles flyout. Chris Chambliss and Roy White hit back-to-back singles to get something going against Torres. Lemon pinch hits Jim Spencer for Brian Doyle, but Spencer didn't do anything productive. he hit a fly ball to left that didn't advance the runners. And in stepped Bucky Dent, who hit his famous home run over the unadorned Green Monster to put the Yankees up 3-2. Remember those days when the Green Monster was just the Green Monster and there were nets above it? You know, there weren't seats above it. There weren't things on it. It was just the Green Monster. So in that moment, when that ball, I sound so New York, don't I? Ball. When that ball went over the wall, Bucky Dent went from being Bucky Dent to Bucky fucking Dent. Mickey Rivers was up after Dent and Torres walked him, which brought Zimmer out of the dugout to call for Bob Stanley's services, and Torres was done for the day. While Thurman Munson was at the plate, Rivers stole second, and then Munson plated Rivers with a double. The inning ended when Lou Piniella hit a fly ball to right, but the damage was done. The 2-0 lead became a 4-2 deficit for the home team. After the Red Sox failed to score in the bottom of the seventh, Reggie Jackson, why can't I speak, led off the top of the eighth with a solo shot to put the Yankees up 5-2. Goose Gossage came in to pitch the bottom of the eighth, and it didn't go so well for him. I remember my dad was not a fan of Goose Gossage at all. I don't think he liked him as long as he was a Yankee. And I think if my dad were alive to hear Goose Gossage's, you know, yearly spring training rants, I think he would probably say that Gossage should just shut the hell up. So anyway, Gossage gave up a double to Jerry Remy to start the inning. He gave up a single to Yaz to score Remy and pull Boston within 2 runs. Then he gave up back-to-back singles to Fisk and Lynn, which pulled the Sox to within a run, but was able to get Butch Hobson to fly out and George Scott to strike out to end the inning. So the Yankees were holding on to a 5-4 lead. After Andy Hassler and Dick Drago combined to pitch a scoreless top of the ninth, the Yankees once again looked to Gossage to save the game and preserve the score. And once again, he had issues. Things started off fine when Dwight Evans hit a fly ball to left for the first out, but then Gossage walked Burleson, and walks are almost never a good thing. Remy was up again. He hit a ball to right that Lou Piniella didn't see because of the combination of sun and shadows that fell upon Fenway at that point in the day. But Piniella caught it on a bounce at the last second and fired in the ball to third to prevent Burleson from getting any farther than second base. That turned into a really big play because the next batter, Jim Rice, hit a fly ball to right that could have been the sack fly to tie the game if Burleson had made it to third, but he didn't. And then Gossage got Yaz to hit a pop out to third to send the Yankees into the ALCS. The days before the wild card and the division series. The very next day, the Yankees were in Kansas City to take on the Royals in the ALCS, and they won Game 1 7-1. And as everyone knows, the Yankees would go on to win the ALCS and win the World Series against the Dodgers again, going back-to-back for the first time since they did it in 1961 and 1962. It's really hard to believe that 1978 was 40 years ago, because it's the first year that I really have tangible memories. I can remember specific things from that year. Although I shouldn't say that, I do actually remember some things from 1977, which was my last year as an only child and the youngest cousin in our family. I had a ton of older teenage cousins when I was toddling and in preschool age. And because of that, I always wanted to be older, and I always acted like I was older than a typical 3- and 4-year-old. So, yeah, and my cousins loved having me around as their little, I wouldn't say plaything. They used to like hanging out with me. They also liked making fun of me when I'd freak out whenever Sean Cassidy was on TV, but that's a whole other story. But yeah, the fact that this game was 40 years ago, it's just crazy to me. And we're 10 years away from all the 50th anniversary celebrations of this game. So, yeah, there's the story of 1978. Up next, we'll recap the first tiebreaker game that happened yesterday. But first, so yesterday was a fun day. Since I work from home, because I'm a freelance writer, I got to watch both games. And I was pleased with the outcomes. You know, I wasn't really rooting for specific teams or anything. I just was glad that there were no blowouts, given how Sunday's games were. although the Rockies and Dodgers game looked to be heading that way, but we'll talk about that in the next segment. In this segment, we're going to talk about the Brewers and the Cubs. It was the better of the two games, and since it was played first, we're going to lead off with that. So the Brewers started off their scoring with a Christian Yelich RBI single in the third. Shocking that Christian Yelich would have a hand in giving the Brewers the lead. It's not like he's not going to be the NL MVP. He should be the MVP. I know people are talking about possibly having Jacob deGrom win the MVP and the Cy Young, like Verlander did all those years ago, but I feel like Christian Yelich should be the NL MVP. So If you have a problem with that, too bad. anyway, the score remained 1-0 until Anthony Rizzo hit a solo home run off. Now, they were saying Yolis Chacin yesterday, but Baseball Prospectus says it's Jolis. So what's going on? So he probably wants people to say Yolis, so I'll say Yolis. Rizzo's was a no-doubter, and, you know, it woke up the crowd, but that's all that they could muster. Then after trading zeros in the sixth and seventh, the Brewers got something going in the top of the eighth. Orlando Arcia opened up the frame with his third hit of the day, a single to center field. Domingo Santana followed that up with a double to left that advanced Arcia to third. Then Lorenzo Cain finished up a six-pitch at-bat against Steve Cishek with a single to center that scored Arcia and moved Santana to third. In fairness, Cishek has pitched so many games down the stretch for the Cubs that I'm surprised his arm is still on. So, you know, I don't think people were actually mad at him. I think people were actually surprised that his arm didn't fall off. But Joe Maddon went to Randy Rosario to face Yelich, who up to this point had three hits. And, you know, it looked like the Brewers could bust this one open, but the move was the right one because Yelich actually struck out and the Wrigley Field crowd of Cubs fans went wild. I have to say, Brewers fans did a very nice job of representing themselves in Wrigley. It was a very split crowd of fans. Then Maddon went to Brandon Kinsler to face Ryan Braun, and that didn't turn out to be the right move because on the fifth pitch of that at bat, Braun hit a single to center to score Santana and put the Brewers up 3-1. Now, the Cubs got lucky when Braun tried to steal second for some reason and was caught. Then Jesus Aguilar, who was at the plate when Braun was thrown out, hit a fly ball to left to end the inning, but the damage was done. Up to that point, Brewers pitching had held the Cubs to only two hits, including Rizzo's home run. Brewers reliever Josh Hader, who's having himself quite a year, both baseball-wise and personally, he came in to pitch the bottom of the eighth, and 14 pitches later, the Cubs had two strikeouts and a lineout to show for it. In the top of the ninth, Jaime Garcia worked around two Brewers singles to pitch a scoreless inning, and the Cubs were down to their last three outs. Daniel Murphy struck out swinging, and Ben Zobrist flied out to right to start, so the Cubs only had one out to work with, and they needed two runs to tie the game. Javi Baez worked a tough at-bat against Hader. Hader threw nine pitches, and Baez hit a single on that ninth pitch to keep the Cubbies alive. So Anthony Rizzo was up next, and all of the Cubs fans' hopes and dreams were heaped upon his shoulders, but alas, those hopes and dreams were shattered when Rizzo took the ball for a ride, but it was caught in right for the last out, and the Brewers won the division. I have to say, I enjoy games like that, especially when my team isn't involved in them. And like I said yesterday, I'm so glad all these games are taking place before the AL wildcard game, which is tomorrow night, and the NL is tonight. So it's a quick turnaround for the two teams that lost yesterday. So the Cubs will be hosting the NL wildcard game. And up next, we'll talk about who will be joining them. But first, the second tiebreaker game actually started while the Brewers were celebrating on the Wrigley Field infield grass, so I actually missed the top of the first, but it was uneventful as the Rockies went down in order 1-2-3 against Walker Buehler. Actually, it was a pretty uneventful game until the bottom of the fourth. Germán Márquez opened up the bottom of the fourth with three strikeouts. Yes, three strikeouts. The only problem is, on the first one, the ball got past Tony Walters, and Max Muncy advanced to first. So after Márquez struck out Machado and Grandal, Cody Bellinger came up and hit a 2-run home run. Both runs were unearned, but it gave the Dodgers a 2-0 lead. Marquez would go up on to give up a double to Yasiel Puig. He would intentionally walk Kike Hernandez and then strike out Buehler to end the inning. So he had 4 strikeouts in an inning and still found himself in a 2-0 hole. Isn't baseball the best? So the Rockies went down in order in the top of the 5th, and the Dodgers didn't score in the bottom. Oh, no, and the Dodgers didn't in the bottom of the 5th. Pardon me. They scored 2 more runs. This time, Jock Peterson opened up the inning with a double, and after a Justin Turner strikeout, Max Muncy took Marquez deep to put the Dodgers up 4-0. The Rockies just couldn't get anything going against Walker Buehler. And then in the bottom of the 6th, Buehler kind of took matters into his own hands when he hit an RBI single off Rockies reliever Harrison Musgrave to put the Dodgers up 5-0. Kike Hernandez had hit a ground rule double right before Buehler's at bat, and he scored on Buehler's single. So that's all the Dodgers would need scoring-wise, but the game became interesting in the 9th when Dave Roberts brought in Kenley Jansen to pitch. Nolan Arenado, who was leading the NL in home runs, started the inning off with a first-pitch home run to keep leading the NL in home runs. It ended the Dodgers' shutout, but it wasn't a big deal. It was 5-1, and with Jansen in, Dodger fans weren't worried. It was almost like they didn't even realize that the home run was hit. It was kind of quiet. It was like, whoa, what happened? Then Trevor Story, who's no slouch himself, worked Jansen, and on the 9th pitch of his at-bat, took Jansen deep to cut the Dodgers' lead to 3. So things were getting a little interesting at that point. I think I said on Twitter that if the Rockies hit 5 home runs this inning, I would never stop laughing. But I knew that wouldn't happen because, one, Dave Roberts wouldn't let it get to that point. And two, it's Kenley Jansen. You know, I realize he had given up back-to-back home runs, but that was very unlike him. And, you know, he's not having the type of year that he usually has, but I didn't think the Rockies were going to catch up. And they didn't. Because after those 2 blips, the Rockies went down in order and the Dodgers won their 6th straight NL West title. So tonight, the Rockies will be in Chicago to take on the Cubs in a do or die game that starts at 8 p.m. on ESPN. So let's quickly preview the NL wildcard game. Kyle Freeland will be starting for the Rockies. John Lester will be starting for the Cubs. So, the winner of the NL wildcard will play the Brewers in the division series starting on Thursday in Milwaukee, and the loser goes home. So, if the Rockies win, they will go to the division series for the first time since 2009, and they will end the Cubs' run of 3 years of going to the NLCS. And as you all know, Colorado lost last year's wild card game to the Diamondbacks. That was a wild game. I recapped that for Baseball Prospectus. There were a lot of triples that happened that game, if I recall correctly. And if the Cubs win, baseball fans will be treated to a best of 5 against the Brewers, which, whoo, that would be really, really fun to see. It's kind of similar to the outcome of the AL wildcard game. If the Yankees move on, they'll be playing Boston in a 5-game series. So the chance of the Brewers and the Cubs and the Red Sox and the Yankees playing a 5-game series, that would make the division series, at least 2 of them, a lot of fun. The Rockies' bullpen has been doing really well since the end of August, and they could be in play tonight because Freeland is only working on 3 days rest. So if he shows signs of any kind of fatigue, expect to see Colorado's pen in the game early. Since September 1st, the Rockies' bullpen has the third best ERA in the NL at 2.98, and they're only behind the Brewers' bullpen, who has an ERA of 1.98 in that span, and the Dodgers with a 2.88 ERA in that span. Through August, Rockies relievers had a 5.00 ERA, so they improved a lot in September. Matt Holliday signed with the Rockies at the end, well, not the end of the season, but I think it was August, and he does pretty well against Lester in his career. He's 7-for-15 in the regular season. But they also have a postseason history. Holliday is 2-for-9 with a home run and 3 strikeouts against Lester. Those bats happened way back in the 07 World Series and the 2013 World Series. I don't want to do a score prediction, but I think the Cubs are going to win this simply because of the Rockies having to travel and, you know, the Cubs got to sleep in their own beds last night and the Rockies had to fly into Chicago. So I'm going to say Cubs, but you never know. Anything can happen. But regardless, it should be a good game and it'll be a nice, I guess, precursor to the AL wild card, which happens tomorrow. So that's it for Locked On Yankees for today. I know I didn't talk a lot about the Yankees, but I will tomorrow because I'll preview the AL wildcard game and, you know, talk about other stuff. And yeah, so that's it. Locked On Yankees is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I've been your host, Stacey Gottsoulias. You can follow me on Twitter at StaceGotts. And you can email me questions at lockedonnyy@gmail.com or tweet me at my personal account, or you can tweet me at Locked On Yankees. You can rate this podcast on Apple and on Google. You can subscribe at Apple, Google, Spotify, and Stitcher. And if you could be so kind, please rate this podcast and spread the word about this podcast. I would appreciate that a lot. So enjoy your day and enjoy the wild card game.